Welcome to Business of Design. Business of Design is the world's best business training for interior design professionals like you. The Business of Design podcast offers immediate, actionable strategies and a glimpse into some of the many field-tested, proven systems you can implement to transform your business and your life. After the show, head to businessofdesign.com and get started with the BOD 15-step project management strategy and 6 foundational programs. Together, they deliver the systems, procedures, and strategies you need to run a successful, highly profitable design business. There's no theory here. The complete BOD business model is yours through Business of Design membership. Business of Design. There's only one. And now, your BOD Advocate-in-Chief, Kimberly Selden.
Well, hello, you fabulous interior design professional. Welcome to Business of Design. I'm so glad you're here. You know, I've been doing the podcast a while now, and I am continually amazed at all the things I learn. But it's sometimes difficult to think of topics that might really be different from previous topics. Today, we've got one. We also have the most amazing guest. Her name is Maddie Goldberg. I call her Chef Maddie Goldberg, and so do millions of people around the world because she is a phenom on Instagram. Maddie is a private home chef. You're going to hear her story from her own mouth, in her own words. She's going to talk about how she had just this love of cooking as a young person. And in fact, I think her mom and dad have a cookbook that she made when she was, you know, prior to junior high school. So really, really long time love of cooking. And Maddie is particularly important because she is the daughter of clients, and she is also the daughter of Business of Design's CFO, Larry Goldberg. So for those of you who have had the good fortune to work with Larry, and he has been able to transform your bottom line, which we know he has because he's now worked with 3 different boss groups and we've seen their actual numbers go up and up and up. You know what a special family this is. And Maddie is just so skilled at what she does. She got her start as a home cook, as I said. She went to culinary school after she did a degree at university in social work. She's still really passionate about social work as well. And then she like skyrockets into like this Michelin-starred restaurant in Toronto and becomes like an indispensable member of this team, and they love her. And then COVID happens, and she decides, you know what, I'm going to do something different. And that's when she became a recipe developer and a private at-home chef. Very different than catering. It's I say in the episode also, it's more like dinner theater. It's like just this cool experience where every dish is perfection. And she describes the love and care that's gone into each dish. And I mean, the difference between Maddie's cooking and my cooking is, you know, I can't even describe what a big divide that is. But she's really something special. Today, she's going to be talking about her experience having to go into so many residences and working in a kitchen she's unfamiliar with, and some of the things she's discovered about the poor functionality of kitchens. And I thought, you know, as an interior design professional, particularly one who doesn't do a lot of cooking, or I'm not a great cook, I do a lot more cooking now than I used to, thanks to COVID. That was a gift I got during COVID. I had to learn, really had to learn how to cook. I don't previously hadn't spent a lot of time cooking, so I'm designing these kitchens and I'm hoping that I have it right. But listening to Maddie, so much just makes sense and really clicks into place. You should definitely follow Maddie on Instagram. She's really a phenom, and some of her videos get millions of views. Maddie at thisiscookeat.com is her email. On Instagram, she's Maddie Goldberg. And all of that information is in the show notes. If you follow me, Kimberly Selden, or Business of Design, we follow Chef Maddie as well. And you might get some ideas about how you can make your social media a little more interesting. And in fact, at the end, she talks about, you know, her recipe for getting it right. I didn't even intend to do that pun. It just came out. There you go. Her recipe. Wonderful episode. Really glad you're here. Some quick announcements from you-know-who, Cheryl Horn, Director of Operations. And we'll get into this amazing episode.
Thanks, Kimberly. Well, next week, April 24th, we're coming up on our next BOD Live meeting, which is our monthly member meeting available to all members to participate in live or catch up on the recordings afterwards if you're not able to join us. Next week, we're going to be clarifying the BOD 15, which is really open coaching, but answering your specific questions on the BOD 15-step project management strategy. Join us, ask your questions. If you're not able to join us live, please send me an email, cheryl@businessofdesign.com, and I will make sure that we get your questions answered for you. And then save the date, October 26th, we are going to be celebrating 20 years of Business of Design at High Point Market. Full day of events planned. Details for both of these are at businessofdesign.com. And while you're on the website, check out membership. We have been doing this for 20 years. The first 10 years of this, I would say the top testimonial we received was, I wish I had found Business of Design sooner. For the last 10 years, well, I guess the last 5 years, we've been doing this podcast for over 5 years now. And now the most common thing I hear is, I've been listening to the podcast forever. I can't believe it took me so long to join. And then someone gets into the specifics of doubling their income, creating enough systems within the first month or two that they could actually hire somebody because they had tasks that they could easily delegate. The feedback we receive on what we do here is really amazing. If you have been listening to this podcast forever, please take that next step and join us. I know we can transform your business, both your bottom line and your time. The two ROIs that you get when you join Business of Design: time and money. So please consider joining us. Check out the details, businessofdesign.com. Membership is right in that main navigation. And if you want to have a one-on-one conversation to find out how Business of Design can work for you, pick up the phone and call me or send me an email, cheryl@businessofdesign.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you so much.
Chef Maddie Goldberg, I can't believe you're here.
Hello.
Hello. I feel so honored you've come on the podcast. For those of you who don't know Chef Maddie Goldberg, you're all going to be following her on Instagram and TikTok, et cetera, and you're going to know who she is. She's kind of impossible not to know about. But I had the privilege, Maddie, of working with you privately during COVID via Zoom because I found myself at home and I had no cooking skills at all. So SOS, Maddie Goldberg, could you at least teach me how to cut an onion? And I mean, everybody who comes to my house to cook, I have to stop them if they're cutting an onion and say, no, that is not how Maddie Goldberg does it. So here's what we're going to do. And well, I show everybody your technique. Yeah.
That's amazing. I know you've also never cooked rice the same since then. That's one I remember for sure.
Your rice method is perfect. I crack up at how people struggle now. And I'm like so obnoxious because I'm like, oh, that is not how you do rice. But anyway, we're not here for a cooking class. This is really kind of an interesting topic. I was thinking about you because Maddie, those of you who heard the introduction know a little bit about her background, but Maddie is a private, in addition to being an award-winning chef, she's a private chef who comes into homes and does these exclusive, really cool experiences. And it occurred to me, we were hanging out one day in Palm Springs, actually, it occurred to me that you've been in a lot of kitchens. You've worked in a lot of kitchens, way more than the number of kitchens I worked in. Right? Like I've designed them, but I haven't worked in them. And I thought, I bet you know what it is that makes a kitchen work or not work. So can yes. we just, I, all that is a long introduction. Can we start by tell everybody who you are and how long you've been in cooking and some of the highlights of your, you know, amazing career?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would initially describe myself as a home cook. Like I started out with just like a genuine love of cooking, love of food. As a kid, my parents just described me as the kid that wanted to eat and eat and eat. And as somebody that's now cooked actually for some kids, I've realized that is very unique because a lot of kids do not eat a lot. And for me, I just loved food and I kind of grew into wanting to cook naturally, because if you love food, how can you create good food often? You know, learning to cook is the way to do that. And then that sort of like took me on a course. Initially, I went to university for social work, which is something I'm super passionate about. And fundraising is something I still do to this day. But separately, I've always sort of had this idea to potentially work with chefs to assist organizations with fundraising. And eventually, once I started doing social work, like as a job, I realized pretty quickly this home cooking love is so much bigger for me. So I ended up going to culinary school after university. And that's essentially when I kind of started my career as a chef. And so I always sort of think of food, I think compared to a lot of chefs, from like that home cooking side. Mm-hmm. You know, I genuinely cooked at home for many, many years before going to culinary school. And when I went to culinary school, one of the first things I learned is most of the kids in culinary school have never cooked in their lives, and that's why they're there. And that was like such a sort of eye-opening experience. And eventually after culinary school, I went on to work at Alouette Restaurant in Toronto. Honestly, for me at the time, it was like my favorite restaurant. They were, you know, the most incredible restaurant group in Canada in my eyes at that time, and honestly still are. And that would be the Alouette Restaurant Group. And I ended up working there for 3 years, where I just developed my skills in cooking like beyond belief. And I've learned so much.
Well, that's actually a Michelin starred restaurant. So this is not like you weren't slinging hash in the back of some diner. Like you went, your first, you know, job in the cooking world was the best of the best of the best. And I imagine there's a bit of intensity that comes with a job like that.
Yeah. Like, you know,
I wish you were all watching
even
on YouTube.
Yeah.
Some people are just listening. You should have seen her face. It's like, oh yeah, no kidding, lady.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's honestly, you know, it's something I'm plan to write about and talk about, because I think a lot of people are interested in what it's like to work in a, you know, a professional kitchen, but the intensity is beyond belief for sure. And sometimes you have to ground yourself and remember, like, you know, as intense as this feels, you are just cooking food for people that hopefully want to enjoy it. A lot of the time, though, you more feel like you're operating on a body that may not live. And so it is about the most intense experience. And what I will say is it's fast-paced learning. It's incredible. Like I learned more in one day working at Alouette than I did in 8 months of culinary school. And I could say that like with confidence, like without question. And something that, you know, Alouette taught me was this sort of ability to be like extremely efficient, extremely organized, and to get a lot done in a small period of time. And that sort of allowed me to do what I do now, which is kind of during COVID, I worked at Alouette for a while, and then I eventually moved on to do sort of my own thing. And that started initially as a lot of recipe development and virtual cooking classes for people like you, Kimberly. So I was pretty much teaching rice for a while there. And then
that's a tragic period in your career, by the way. I get that. I was so lucky.
And then essentially once COVID let up enough that people could enter other people's homes, I started doing private dinners. And that's still what I do to this day. So I started my business about 3 years ago. And essentially I go into people's homes. I cook a 6 to 7 course dinner in their kitchen. I plate, I serve, I chat with the table. It's like a super interactive, really, really fun dining experience, and you get to be in the comfort of your home. And to sort of tie it all together with my social work background, I decided that for all the dinners that I do, 10% of the cost is donated to a charity of the host choice. Sort of for two reasons, it's the host choice. One, I didn't necessarily feel like associating with one specific charity, but I also think it's just really beautiful to have somebody think beyond just like a good meal, but also, you know, think about what's really meaningful to them and where their money could go. And right. So I do that donation as part of my business. And then, you know, going back to the design thing, like when you start a job, I feel like everyone, you know, I knew starting as a private chef, I would be cooking in other people's kitchens. And I knew what cooking in kitchens is like, of course. One thing you don't think about, like any job, there's all these aspects you don't think about. And being a private chef, like one of the biggest things I never thought about and realized very quickly is working in a space that you can't even picture before you enter, and having a job that has a lot of demands. Like to be a private chef, I enter all these homes by myself. I work I am my sole employee. So, you know, I'm entering these homes by myself. I have a certain amount of time to prepare, get this dinner ready. And it's six courses. It could be up to, you know, 20 people, and it's all on me. So it really, I learned very quickly that there's kitchens that people have that are so much more functional than other people's kitchens. And I started to joke with people like, well, you know, it started as like, hey, like why have your cutlery here versus there? And eventually that joke turned into like, wouldn't it be cool if you worked with designers to actually design a functional kitchen space? I'm not somebody who would work on aesthetic necessarily, but I surely know how to cook in essentially any space, and I know what really optimizes a space, that's for sure. So it was like fun chatting with you. Like, I'm happy to be here to talk about it.
Well, it kind of blew my mind because I thought I've never cooked in one of my clients' kitchens. So yeah, I can't actually tell you whether or not they're highly functional. I think they are because my clients haven't complained, but what have I missed? Tell us, like, for example, were you ever in a kitchen that was highly dysfunctional? And what were the things that you ran into, or multiple kitchens where it was just not organized? What are some of the obvious things?
Yeah, like, there's so many. I think to start, like, I think of a kitchen space in terms of functionality as sort of like what you need it for. Obviously, I'm approaching this as a private chef, so I'm approaching it as somebody who's going to be cooking a lot in this kitchen. I think, you know, probably as an interior designer, like the first question would be like, do you cook in this kitchen? There are people, yeah. Like I promise you, I've been in multiple kitchens at this point where I'm the first person to use their oven.
Right.
Like, I've been in those kitchens. From the perspective of functionality, though, I think of like, there's sort of two spaces. There's like the cooking space. So that would be like the stovetop, the oven space, which obviously is like the actual like heat and kind of what you're going to be using to cook. And then separately, there's like the cleaning space, which is as important in a kitchen as a cooking space.
That's I'm really sure. good at cleaning. So I feel like for sure yeah. I know how that works. Yeah.
Yeah, and that would be though like the sink. Cause for example, like something off the bat that probably would drive me the most nuts that I see in a kitchen often is having a dishwasher far from the sink. And I, as a private chef in somebody's home, am trying to obviously keep the kitchen space very clean as I'm working. And when I'm rinsing plates and dragging them above the floor and dropping water on the ground just to get it into the dishwasher, right away I think, very unfunctional space.
Wow. I can't imagine not putting the dishwasher near the sink. I wish I had two dishwashers. That's one thing. I often recommend that now to clients because some of the cycles take so long. And yeah, always like the house we were at in Palm Springs, the dishwasher took like what, like 4 hours?
Yeah, it was 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're like, geez, should we run it half full or should we wait and run it overnight? Like that's a long time.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think there's also certain things in a kitchen that I guess, you know, it's obvious to put the dishwasher next to the sink for most people. Believe it or not, I've seen it so many times where it's not. I think people get really in their head about aesthetics. So I think dishwasher is ugly. People try to sort of hide it in the corner area or somewhere that maybe it isn't as seen. Also, I've seen it where for me personally, like having the garbage just not be accessible. Like I think that drawer being directly next to the sink is game changing. Cause the reality is half the time you're using the garbage, it's probably going to be related to clearing off your plate. And then separately, just having something that you don't have to physically like shove under, for example, if it's under the sink, bend down, like having something that's just really accessible for mm-hmm. garbage, super important. And then separately, like the more interesting space obviously is that sort of stovetop space. I feel like for me personally, my biggest pet peeve with that is not having space next to your stovetop area.
Right. So no counter space beside the stovetop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, for me, like the most exciting kitchens to cook in have stainless steel surfaces next to the ovens.
You love a stainless steel counter.
Oh, beyond belief. Like, I think it's, I think it looks,
they look so great. Cool.
And it works so well for functionality. And you have still an island or another space where you can put a big marble or something for that aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've never had one. I've always wondered what it would be like to have it. To me, it feels like stainless steel could be super cold in the winter and super hot in the summer. So I think, do I really want to live with it? But I know you love it. And I've done it in kitchens and the clients love it. So yeah. Got to think about that.
I think of it as like, again, I would approach, like if I were to not think of cooking for myself and I were to approach it from just sort of any client that I, you know, say consulted a kitchen space for, I would definitely initially ask, do you cook? Like, to me, that's because I really do feel like there's kitchens that you could make functional, you know, functional enough. Say you have a nanny or somebody who comes in and does some cooking every once in a while. But for the most part, you're like heating up or you're just clearing the table or you're have sort of another means of getting food, whether it's ordering or whatnot. That's sort of one kitchen space. Separately, there's that do you cook often and the priority would be function type space. And that sort of is where the stainless steel countertops come in. I also think having like that kitchen counter space is huge as well. Like something I see like very often and I do not love is having the cutlery far from the stovetop. Like very often you'll see sort of almost like it's a section near the table where it would have like dishware. So like plates, cups, bowls. Below that you'd have your cutlery and that's near say like a dining room table area.
Right.
As someone that cooks often, like I often need to grab a fork or a spoon, like all pretty much throughout cooking. Obviously, you'd have hopefully your utensils near the stovetop,
right,
but
right.
To me, having a cutlery drawer near, like directly next to the stovetop, is just game changing.
That's interesting. As a non-cook, or so I do know how to cook a little bit now, thanks to Maddie. You got me started during COVID, which was great. But you're right. I've never thought about that. Of course, I think serving spoons, but I didn't think about that trial fork. And it's funny because I'm imagining myself now at home. Especially our place in the country, I have to go a long way to get a fork if I want to taste something. So yeah, now, I know now I'm like, okay, I'm going to rejig the kitchen a little, put some tasting forks near the stove. That's interesting. You sometimes go through the motion and you do all these extra steps and it doesn't even occur to you that there might be a better way to do it. How often, how much does having two cooks in the kitchen change how you want that kitchen to function? Because when you're a private chef, you're alone, but in your own family, you have so many good cooks and you're like buzzing around like a choreographed team. Like, yeah. So, does that also, I mean, we've got to ask that too, right? Do two people cook at this house?
Yeah. I mean, I think of obviously do two people cook. Another, I think like huge point is, do you have kids, especially young kids? I would say at least, you know, over half of the dinners I do are homes with young kids in them. And I get questions all the time about like functionality related to like safety or just related to maybe kids who want to help cook in the kitchen, like for fun, obviously. And I think two cooks in the kitchen and kids, either or, I think you want to think about open space. You know, in a restaurant, you're working on a line. So like the line is literally just the space of the kitchen and most of it's like extremely tight. And for that reason, you have to be a professional and you have language like behind to let somebody know you're behind them. I think at home, you want to ensure that you're not like over cluttering a space, meaning adding, in my opinion, like, you know, too many seating spaces like high, like bar type stools that are really clunky that are taking up sort of a walkway, making sure you don't have an island that's so big, suddenly the space isn't as functional because you have a tight kind of area that two people can't pass through. Mm-hmm. I also think for me, I used to joke when I worked in a restaurant that I was like a minimalist line cook. Like what I mean by that is I don't like keeping a lot of things out that I don't need. I think it's just confusing. So for me, having just like open counter space and then having the ability to put an appliance up there is a lot more important than ensuring my counter space fits every single appliance. Right. It's like, I guess to kind of put that into other terms, it would be like having a lot of counter space that's just open and then enough storage space off to the side that doesn't even have to be that close by. Like it could be its own pantry that has the appliances. Obviously aesthetically that's nice. Like it just looks like an open space. But honestly, if you think for most home cooks, like how often do you use a stand mixer compared to how often do you chop something? And to be honest, like if you're chopping something next to a stand mixer, like a KitchenAid all the time, it really, although you might not think it, it is confusing your brain. It makes you feel less organized, like having stuff on your space you don't need. And then also, I think just in terms of two cooks in the kitchen, you know, the less stuff that you have out that's not being used, the more room you have for two, three, four cooks. I think having something like an island for having kids kind of join in with cooking is really ideal because it sort of keeps them like out of the kitchen space, meaning like away from the stovetop. They could be on the other side of the island that's away from the oven, the stovetop, the heat, but they can still fully be in the kitchen joining. I also think, you know, having sort of stools or bar stools that are on the other side of the island, something where people can kind of be a part of the cooking experience but not bothering anyone, is also just like an amazing thing to have. If I'm going to be honest, like in my, something I've just dreamed of having in my kitchen would be having a stovetop on my island, like looking out, because I spend most of my time at the stovetop when I'm cooking. And I think being able to, you know, chat with people while I'm actually cooking would be so cool versus most people, you obviously see them have their sink on that space. That's just like a personal dream.
No, it's just, it's so funny. If you see Chef Maddie in action, you're super cool and relaxed and you're having a conversation. Now compare that to me, who's like, oh, like concentrating as hard as I can and looking at my book. And like your mom's cookbooks have like food all over them because it's just like splashing going, like there's just madness going on, right?
So oh my God.
I had my cooktop on an island when my kids were little, and I got rid of it because I never cooked facing anybody. So, you know, it was just stressful. And I love having the island as a surface I can put buffet things on.
Yes, yes.
Clean surface. But I get what you're saying. Like if you have a client whose passion is cooking and they want people to come in and talk to them while they're doing it, then that putting it on the island makes sense.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think I totally agree with that. And that's why I say like there's definitely certain things that I'm, you know, if I'm saying it's my dream kitchen space, that's obviously coming from the mind of somebody who cooks like incredible
all the time, except for breakfast. Maddie had no breakfast this morning, just coffee. Yeah. That's how you stay so skinny, so slim, being a chef.
I work out for that. But yeah, I definitely think, you know, having the stovetop on an island space would solely work for somebody who is extremely passionate about cooking. I have been in many homes of people who, you know, hire me because they're excited to hang out with a chef, ask questions because they're as passionate about cooking as I am. So for people like that, I think that's just a cool feature. I think you'd want to think about, if you obviously use a sink more, it would probably make sense to go on the island because then you're conversing with people more when you're using it.
Okay, let me ask you something. Let's say you've got a client and they love to cook. Do you propose for that client induction or gas?
This had such an interesting like wave of hype over it. I feel like, you know, I get asked specific questions like in waves. So that was something like gas or induction is something probably like a month ago, I had like 10 people ask me at 10 different dinners. And I I think it's you know, something I can talk a lot about, but I'll try to say, just like, I actually had induction. So I can speak on this. I've obviously worked in professional kitchens. When I was working at Alouette for years, I only cooked on gas. So I have kind of experience working gas. Separately, I owned an induction burner when I started my private dining. When I was doing prep, I was using induction. For people that don't know, like, I think like anything, you need to understand it to then decide the differences. So, or decide which one you should go with. And so it, obviously gas, everyone knows gas. It's open fire. It's like the way we have been cooking for many, many years. Induction is sort of like a newer invention, and it's conducting heat through essentially like magnetic waves. What's cool about that is the surface that you're using does not get hot. So kind of going back to the kids thing, like a lot of people that ask me this ask it for two reasons. One, I have kids, or I'm having kids and I want to pick just the safest burner, or two, they're often asking about sort of aesthetically and functionality, which do you, like me myself, think is better. I think in terms of kids, they're, is a really good argument for that induction stovetop. And that's because of the lack of heat that's actually going to be on that surface. So it's conducting heat to the pan, but once you touch that surface, it's only going to be as hot as, say, that pan was sitting on there for 10 minutes. It's going to be a little bit hot from just sitting there for a while. Right. But the actual heat is not being conducted outwardly. You will not feel it.
Right.
I think that, you know, that has benefits. What's amazing about induction too is when you turn it to high, it gets as hot as possible in seconds. Could boil water in probably about a minute. And the lowest of low is, you know, could melt butter all day without it burning. That's incredible when you think about that. So its range is amazing.
I like how sleek it looks, but when I go to somebody's home and they've had it for a long time, sometimes they surface is pretty beat up.
I had a client or a woman that I was doing a dinner for ask me this question, because again, I get asked it a lot, and she was asking me purely from a aesthetic standpoint, right, induction gas. She was like, I'm asking everyone and I need to know what you think. And I told her without question, if you're looking for aesthetic, I would get gas. Firstly, I think a gas range is beautiful, but secondly, it's durable. You know, it's going to be equipment that you can always wash. You can always clean that equipment. This is stuff that's used in professional kitchens at a rate that home cooks could never use it at, and we're able to clean it until it's spotless in a professional kitchen. So this is something you can always clean, and you can never really worry about breaking. Like, you're never going to scratch it. You're never going to chip it. You're never going to do anything but the gas. Separately, induction, if you move your pan the wrong way and get one scratch, it's never going to be the same again. Induction, if you were to accidentally slip and drop a cast iron pan, you could break the entire induction top.
Right.
Like, crack it. There's such a, it's so much more sensitive to just wear and tear than something like a gas stove. Like, I would literally compare it to, like, a gas stove would be like working with like cast iron, like something that's just so durable and lasts forever, versus induction stove would be like working with a nonstick pan where the second you use metal on it, you throw it out.
All right. Since you brought up cast iron, I got to ask you about your toe. What happened?
Oh my God.
Tell everybody, it's gruesome.
Sorry. This is the saddest part of this question is I actually broke a different toe 2 days ago.
No, you didn't.
Yes. So Kimberly's asking me about my toe, which I broke in October. I dropped a pan on it. Unfortunately, I did not drop cast iron. I actually dropped a pan that's not even that heavy, but somehow it landed perfectly and it broke my big toe. And unfortunately, you need your big toe like
you
really
do.
Bad. Yeah. You needed to walk, you needed to balance. So that one took a very long time. And then more recently, 2 days ago, I haven't gotten it looked at, but I think I broke my baby toe, which much, much more useless toe.
Yeah.
And so that one I've been able to just function and move on normally with.
Are you barefoot in the kitchen? Is this what's happening?
No. The pinky toe break was from, we'll call it a silly accident.
Okay.
But it had nothing to do with cooking. Nothing's dropped on that toe.
When I heard that story, it just sounds so gruesome to have your toe. And I understand it was a pretty bad hit. The big toe took a hit and it was some serious damage. Yeah. I now think I'm never cooking barefoot again. Like never, never, never.
Yeah, the worst part, I was actually cleaning was when it happened. So I wasn't even cooking. I now don't cook or clean barefoot, obviously. But, you know, you need safety while cleaning too, is the message I can pass along there.
Maddie, thank you so much. This was so interesting. I want to ask you one final thing. We do at the end of every show, we have something called design intervention. It's just a great piece of advice. And I know that you have gone from working for various companies to then being self-employed and working for yourself. Has there been some information or advice that you've been given that was really instrumental in helping you run a profitable business?
I mean, it would be hard to pick one for sure. I think for me, I've done a lot of sort of yes woman type work, meaning I like to take on as many opportunities as possible. And even if I don't see a direct correlation to that opportunity, maybe leading to exactly what I want to do, I find there's a lot of things I've done just in the space of food or just working with people I respect and associating sort of myself in different areas that I just feel really passionate about, and then sort of allowing that to eventually come together as the big picture.
So following the opportunity, saying yes to the
And just saying yes to opportunities when you don't always see the direct path to, you know, your main goal, but just really taking on things that you're passionate about in general.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And then I was going to say, and lastly, you know, for me, I got really early on in the sort of social media game in food. And I got some advice in university to start an Instagram when I was like just a home cook for fun. And, you know, that's probably some of the best advice I got, because 8 years down the line now, I've been able to use my social media in just massive ways to help my business grow and to really do a lot of the things I want to do that I'm really passionate about. So, you know, it's a hard game to get into, but I'd say social media, whether you're a consumer or not, using it as a business tool is just game changing.
I know that you've had some video. I think you've had videos that have gone well over 100,000 hits. Have you had videos that have gone over 1 million?
I've had many videos. I would say
you're being all like humble about it. Like now you're at the point where lots of your videos go viral.
Yeah, I think, you know, viral is also a funny word, because I've had videos get like multi-million views and I've seen little come from that, meaning like followers or interest in my dining. And then I've had other videos get 100,000 views and I've gotten more, you know, recipe subscribers or followers or people signing up for private dinners just from that sort of much smaller video. Mm-hmm. I think the way I describe, like, people ask me about Instagram all the time, and the biggest thing I tell them is it's 100% a lottery. And, you know, it's a lottery that the more you are consistent, the more you kind of create a voice and keep up with that, the more likely you are to win. Winning being getting a video go viral. The second a video goes viral, you know, think about what that video had and do more of that. And eventually it should lead you to a place where hopefully some stuff starts taking off. But like, people think it's simple, or once you have it, it's easy. What I will say is it's a lot of working into the void. I've done so many recipes. I've done hours and hours and hours of content that you feel like nobody's even remotely looking at. And you wonder all the time, like, why am I doing this? But that goes with that sort of yes woman thing. It's like, you know, I love cooking. I'm going to be cooking no matter what. I might as well share it with people. Sometimes it feels useless, but the big picture is it's definitely not. And that's sort of been proven over time. But it took me 8 years to build up my account to what it is. And, you know,
that's the best analogy I've ever heard, that it's a lottery and you're often working into the void. I feel like you really, really get
big time.
Tell everybody how they can find you on social media.
Yeah, definitely. I put out a recipe every Thursday. So if you like cooking or if you just like getting some inspiration, you can find that on my Instagram. So it's at Maddie Goldberg. That's Maddie with a Y. And then also I do have, like I mentioned, obviously, like opportunities, you could do a private dinner with me. All that information's on my website, which is thisiscookeat.com.
Yeah. And all of that information is at in our show notes at Business of Design, and the private dining experience is, it's not fair to call it catering because that's not what it is at all. It's more like dinner and theater, and it's a wow. Like I've given Maddie's services to clients at the end of the year and they are just blown away by the experience. So definitely think about that.
Yeah,
and you know, the other thing, and I don't know if you ever consider this, but if you're local to Toronto and you want some advice on how to set up a kitchen, I suppose you don't have to be local to Toronto. I suppose you could send drawings, but you might think about consulting interior design professionals because, you know, it's not like you would need to hire someone over and over again, but to get advice and understand what might really work for someone who is a cook at home chef, I think would be really smart. So that's another thing you might need Maddie Goldberg for.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Besides that, she's just so adorable. It was so nice to see your face this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kimberly. This is so fun. I'm so happy
we did. I wish you were here right now to make something for lunch.
Yeah, I'm about to go. It's actually Thursday today, and I'm about to go make my Thursday recipe.
Oh, gosh, no. You know, most of the time I comment something like, you're the devil, because it's always like these big, fluffy, delicious buns or like sticky toffee pudding. And I'm like, stop it. Can you please just make a vegetable? Here's a punitive, broccoli dish for you.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks, sweetie. Nice seeing you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Kimberly.
All right, bye for now.
Thanks for listening and supporting the BOD mission to improve the industry one design business at a time. If you're ready to implement an exact business model for running a streamlined, profitable business, field tested by thousands of design professionals around the world, head to businessofdesign.com and get started today. It's time to dramatically improve your business and transform your life.